Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by returning guest, Drayton Bird, a legend in direct marketing and copywriting. As director of Drayton Bird Associates, Drayton has shaped the marketing strategies of global giants like American Express, Mercedes, and Virgin. He has worked in over 53 countries around the world. Described by the Chartered Institute of Marketing as one of the 50 individuals who have most influenced modern marketing, he continues to write for clients. Drayton is the author of 6 books translated into 17 languages and continues to influence the industry through his lectures worldwide and leadership in multiple companies. I've asked him to come back and join us here again to share his story and insights as a marketing master. So Drayton, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'd just like to say thank you for saying all that. I would pay somebody to come out with all that. At least 20% of it was true. Maybe 23%, who knows? I'll tell you one thing. I've spent the last few weeks, maybe more, following the circus surrounding Mr. Trump. And this has had an interesting, interesting to me, side effect, because I've spent my life being told every now and then, here is something completely new. It's going to change everything. Everything is going to change.
Right.
but nothing changes. What people don't seem to realize is that people don't change. That's one thing. And the other thing is that a lot of the things that come up don't work very well for one reason or another. And the thing that's really everyone's been talking about for quite a while now is all this automated speaking stuff.
Right. The AI. The bots are going to replace us. They said that when the tractor came out, that it was going to replace the farmers. And then they said it was going to happen when calculators came out and they had to lay off the teams of mathematicians. And then they said it again, the software is going to replace all of us. We're going to need universal basic income. When spreadsheets came out, one spreadsheet and formulas could replace the whole department. And here we are again, AI is going to replace us all. And I just think it's tools. I'm only 41, so I haven't been around the sun as many times, but my opinion is they're all tools. As a species, we're never going to want to relinquish control. So unless we'd all collectively decide to roll over and die, we're all going to want to keep driving the bus. And the bus is a tool. These things are still tools, and that's all they are. We're not creating a genie, and it's all marketing hype, I think. I think they're just really good tools. That's my opinion. I don't know.
I think that the essentials never change. How can you persuade people to do what you want them to do? And why are they so reluctant? You're going to be even more reluctant if you depend for persuasion on these automated voices. So I've spent my time, I've got nothing left to do really. I'm avoiding revising a particular book, which I've been avoiding now for at least 3 years, maybe 4, assisted by people who are also avoiding it. And so I've been watching the great Trump circus. I'm quite fascinated, mainly because I've got 2 children in America and I fear for their future. But so I've had occasion to listen to all the automated voices telling me what's going on. And what's interesting about when you persuade people to do something or communicate anything, the way in which you emphasize what matters and don't emphasize what doesn't matter, which actually, by the way, this is what life is all about. The way in which you emphasize what matters and what doesn't matter, whatever you're talking about, happiness, whatever, or marketing or selling or whatever, it's always the same. You've got to emphasize the right things. So this wonderful new breakthrough, which I've been hearing so much about from very talented people, much cleverer than me and much younger than me, doesn't work. And it doesn't work because there is no way in which the right emphasis is placed on particular words. Sentences lose their meaning. The whole thing is a complete farce. Another non-breakthrough. I suspect that the secret of success in anything must surely be how you deploy the tools at your disposal. How you pay attention to the right things and don't pay attention to the wrong things. You're sending out torrents of messages where the emphasis is placed at random, so to speak. You're completely failing to communicate. So this one new tool, which is going to help everyone communicate better, is actually helping everyone to communicate worse or not at all. It's amazing to me. Over the years, I've seen things come and go that are going to change everything.
Yep.
Online is going to change everything.
Yeah. In some ways it did. It's enabled. Right now, we're already cyborgs because we're using tools and devices to talk from other sides of the planet. But I get what you say is the principles. Was it Dan Kennedy said this, the tactics frequently change, the strategies rarely, but sometimes change, and the principles never change. And that's almost the basis. I think for high volume transactional stuff, someone might be okay with an AI chatbot. But if someone is going to be making a major life decision on something, then even then at the end of the day, you just don't get that soul satisfaction talking to a robot like you do with a night with friends, it's hanging around, talking, connecting, heart to heart, soul to soul. I think that's, yeah.
One of the most interesting conversations I had with David Ogilvy was when he was buying me dinner, and being Scots in origin, David was reluctant to spend too much money on anything. And I can always remember the first time he ever bought me a lunch, which was in France. He said to me, "Are you having a starter?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Hurry up." But he said to me, out of the blue, people with good minds have a way of saying things that are completely unexpected and that seize your attention. And he said to me, "Do you know what really matters in this business, Drayton?" And I said, "No, David, what is it?" And he said, "Charm. Don't be charming with an automated thing rabbiting at you."
Right. The personality, the likability, that's important. Yeah.
If you look at all the people that make an impact, it is their character, the things that differentiate them, that make the difference. Just as if you want to sell something or persuade someone to do something, it is how you differentiate what you're proposing from what they may be considering that makes a difference. And that is what our business is all about. Many years ago, I was involved in looking at how you sell books. And one of the books that I was involved in looking at was called The Art of Selfishness. Quite an interesting
concept, yeah.
Because it's how do you get people to get to believe that you're going to give them what they want?
To believe, that's an important part.
Yeah, and if you're coming out with a lot of waffle, if you're not getting to the point, you're going to be in trouble. I was thinking about this the other day because many years ago, I suddenly discovered this, I only worked this out recently, that the first marketing book I wrote was called Common Sense Direct Marketing. And it was a slim and elegant volume, full of wisdom. But as time went by, it became fatter and fatter until eventually it became useful, amongst other things, for keeping doors open, for propping up desks and so on. But what it said at the beginning, I think, was quite important. And it quoted Confucius. And Confucius essentially said, if you cannot clearly communicate what you are saying in a way that other people all understand it, then the way he put it, that he said, then what should happen does not happen. And the people stand around in helpless confusion. And this is what most people, especially people who are beginners at marketing or ploughing their way through its cluttered outskirts, they find it incredibly difficult to know what they should concentrate on, what matters, what doesn't matter, and why it matters. And the more new ideas are put forward, new technologies emerge, the more confused they become.
Yeah, I think it's really important people understand the history of things, because at least then you understand what stood the test of time versus constantly chasing the new shiny object. And I agree with that 100%. Part of what you just said, what I wrote down was, I'm a writer downer, so I'm always taking notes, but I wrote down build bridges when you said the Confucius quote. It's about connecting. Today's day and age, we all know the frustration of dealing with some company that's got a monopoly on an industry thanks to government assistance in that. And you're stuck on dealing with some robotic call thing, and you really just want another human to talk to. When everybody wants these online companies where money flies into the ATM and into their pockets while they're on the beach. But the reality is that all money is made through serving other people. All a company is a group of people that help another group of people, and they do it via a product or service. When you talked about the communicating, it's really about building bridges. It's about finding people that are having some sort of problem that you can solve and building a bridge to them. And that's done via communication and understanding what they want to hear is what I'm getting from you. And that, I feel like there's almost no shortcut to that other than just rolling up your sleeves and getting out there and shaking hands and kissing babies and paying attention. Is that?
I'll tell you what concerns me. And it is that in many ways, the marketing world has gone backwards. When I started out as a copywriter, most of the stuff I did, not all of it, was advertisements. And if you wanted to run an advertisement, you had to submit it. And there was a body called the Advertising Something or Other Association, whose job it was to make sure that you didn't break the law. So there was a rule of law imposed upon you. I can remember my first great success was selling a thing called the Bullworker, which makes you big and strong, which still sells to my astonishment 50 odd years later. Didn't make me big and strong. But I learned enough to know how you didn't need a tool to help you. You could do it on your own. And I remember when I wrote this advertisement, I was then hauled up in front of the Advertising Standards Authority and asked to justify the claims I was made. Yeah. So there was a police. Today, as you can find out simply by going online anywhere, anybody can tell you lies about anything.
Yep.
And you have a vast, ignorant audience of billions who fall for all this rubbish.
Yep.
Some of them occasionally vote for the wrong politician. Things have gone backwards.
Because you feel that now there's not that same governance. It's almost the Wild West again, where anybody can say everything.
Completely. I look every day at all the emails I get, and I'm staggered at the number that are just a pack of lies.
Yeah, yep.
And depend for their success upon exploiting the ignorance of most people. And most people are ignorant and conceivably getting even more ignorant.
Yep.
It's
yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. I did a workshop. We have a mutual friend. I'm going to get his last name wrong, but he was a copywriter for Mindvalley, Brian Kasing. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right.
No, he's asking me. My memory for just about everything.
Yeah, it's okay. You know what I'm talking about. We did a workshop together in Vietnam. We just happened to be in the same place at the same time. And we said, hey, maybe we should just put on a workshop together. And we'd actually only done a podcast. He'd been on my podcast. And we just decided to co-host an event together. And we decided we would help English teachers there in Vietnam. It was like the English teacher breakout or something like that. I was teaching them how to become independent versus having to work for a school and maybe even have a body of students that they can teach remotely and travel. This is before COVID. And we put 50 people in a room in Hanoi and we did this little workshop and we recorded it. And we were joking afterwards about maybe selling the tapes or something. And then we were both going to be in Saigon in 3-4 weeks time at the same time. We said, hey, let's do it again. And I got things ready to do it. And Brian had something coming up and couldn't make it. And I still put the little workshop on. And this is just a side thing, a hobby thing. But there was a gentleman that came and the offer was, if you don't think it'll work for you, if you don't like my content or don't think it'll work for you at the lunch break, let me know and you get a full refund. Lunch break comes and goes. And there was one gentleman, he was an older gentleman, and he said he thought it was great, but he's not good with computers. And so everything I was talking about was online. And I'm okay, here's your refund. And I finished the workshop. And at the end of it, we're packing up. And this guy is hanging back late. He's talking to my wife, not my girlfriend then. And he's just dumbfounded because he wants to be a writer, but he can't get enough clients to leave English teaching. And that's his problem. And he picks my wife's brain because she's running a writing agency. She's got 20 something. I think she had 18 to 20 clients. She had almost 30 something staff. She just left university and had just launched this business. And with my help had been super successful. And this guy's got 10 years on her and he can't rub two sticks together. And he's picking her brain and he's all this stuff and all this finished. And we stay like 40 minutes after the event's done. And then we're about to leave. And he goes, by the way, Daryl, I need that refund. And I said, pardon, what? And he goes, I used my rent money to come to this event. And if I don't get a refund, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. And it wasn't a lot of money. And I was like, I felt like that was a really, bro, you came, you ate my food, you hung out, you're like, we're here 40 minutes later, whatever, here's the refund. 3 months later, I see this guy posting in a Facebook group, because in Vietnam, all the expats were chatting in these chat groups, and he's posting his Manifest the Business of Your Dreams workshop. And I was so livid, because I knew him and I knew how he dressed and all. And I know that there's good, sincere, genuine people that are going to invest in this nonsense, and they're just going to be led into a brick wall. And that actually led me to spend $50,000 US to hire 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success, because I wanted to create a third-party certification program that validated people could get results. I ended up not being able to do that to other people, because other people don't want their programs. They don't want third-party validation. That's not a lot of people are signing up to find out if they are the imposter that they think they might be. But what it did for me is it allowed me to use that in my programs, in my curriculum, in my stuff. And then even with this podcast, help find guests. But just to talk about all the nonsense out there, in a lot of ways, there's good and bad. There's been a lot of erosion of faith in our institutions, in universities. What are these universities teaching kids these days? But now it's become a Wild West, because before there was due process. There was a formalized version of the apprenticeship system where you go to university and you'd study under someone and you'd have to present your thesis to other experts and publish work and contribute. And now it's a pay-to-play system that's everyone's looking for tenure so they can just retire. And so it really is a Wild West like that. Can you maybe spell down, if you had a new copywriter in front of you or a new business owner that's got their mousetrap that they've got to sell, what would be some words of wisdom to someone who's either starting out or struggling right now?
I think you have to start with the knowledge that marketing is about choice. And so the big question you have to ask yourself is, why should people choose you? And in order to be able to answer that question, you have to take the trouble and the effort and the misery of looking into all the other people, the relevant people that you think are offering something similar to what you're offering. And that's what it's all about. I worked with a guy called G. Griffin, long dead now, but a good old-fashioned mail order guy. And he taught me a lot about the power of simple things. And I've actually been looking at things on online advertisements, offering people something which will stop them being blinded when they're driving along and somebody's, yeah?
Yeah.
And I look at this and I keep on thinking to myself, Drayton, you're too old and stupid to get involved in this, but you are sorely tempted, are you not, to try and rerun G. Griffin's headline from 40 years ago, which was so much better than what is being done now. And you will understand when I tell you the simple phrase that was the first headline. The simple phrase was, "End blinding headlight glare." And if you think carefully enough and try and simplify enough, you arrive at the right answer. So what would the advertisement be? I've written them and it says, "End blinding headlight glare." So what should I do? Maybe I should have a picture that shows somebody suffering from blinding headlight glare. So the illustration was very simply a guy with his hand in front of his face, and you could see the stuff coming. Very simple. So that was one less. How do you simply and dramatically offer a benefit that relates to what you offer? Now, the next question that comes along is, okay, you've got a great business, and people are buying this product. And then sales went down a bit. And Gene Griffin, who knew the power of language, changed the headline. He changed it to "End blinding headlight glare." Instantly, sales went up. Because he understood a very simple fact that people want it, and they want it now. Sales went down after a bit. And Gene changed the headline. He changed it to "End blinding headlight glare." Instantly. For good. And every time I see this stuff online, I think Gene Griffin knew more in 5 minutes than these people know after all these years and all these brilliant new forms of communication that are going to change everybody's lives. It's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. The one thing that would change people's lives is if any of the billionaires who effectively run the internet were to introduce a new element to proceedings, it would change everything. And that element would be called honesty.
Yeah.
The rule of law, you say, when, what do I want to know? I want to know that I'm going to get what I want. What is important about that is that I really do know I'm going to get what I want. And the reason I'm going to get what I want is if I don't get what I want, somebody's going to jail. Yeah. That is not the way people are running things at the moment.
No, that's when in my research, I found an interesting finding, and it was that one of the best places to operate a business, one of the most fertile grounds, are highly religious communities. And the reason that they gave was because there was an understood set of morality and conflict resolution, because everybody has the same standards. Whereas if you, like you're talking about now, when you don't know who you can trust and you don't know what their morals are, it can be huge. There can be huge swings in things where this is where we get some of this might is right. If I can get over, there's an element of people in the world that are completely, they're complete psychopaths. They're complete psychopaths. And they will happily eat your lunch and your kid's lunch and step on your face and take credit for all. There are those people, not everyone, they're a small percentage, but just because to your point, it was only one study. I didn't even look in if it was a very valid study. Someone might have a cross, but it made sense to me because I've had that experience where people, you do business with some people and the only way to do business with them is with a lawyer beside you at the same time, because otherwise if they can get away with it, they're going to get away with it. And it's just business. It's just the way it is. There is no morality. It's if I can, might is right. And that's just a really... The consumer doesn't want that, right?
I'll tell you a story, which is a tangent perhaps, but I got my training in copy partly because I stumbled across David Ogilvy. And when I got my first job as a creative director in London, I think I was 28 years old, 27. I just read everything Ogilvy had said, and I'll try all this. And it was a fashionable agency and I was getting good money. But I noticed something strange, which was that I was an associate director, not a full director. And one day I said to my boss's boss, the guy who owned the company that owned the company, I said, I've done some research. I do recommend research. I've discovered that 19 out of the top 25 advertising agencies in the world are run by ex-cons. Why am I not on your board? So he said, calm down, come and have lunch. And then he said, calm down, be patient, be dolly. And I thought, fuck. And I'd been approached by this person, going back to the thing I was talking about before, who'd had been a director of the agency. And he said, would you like to come and have lunch? And we had lunch in a restaurant near Paddington Station in London, which is still there, and it's called the Bizarro. And what's bizarre about the Bizarro is they misspelt Bizarro. Two Z's and two R's. You only need one Z. And they said, we've got this product, and we'd like you to look at it. I said, what is it? And they said, it's a bodybuilding device. I said, oh, that's interesting. And they said, how do you think you could help sell it? And I said, I don't know. I said, show me the numbers. Show me what you've been running. And they showed me the numbers. And then I said, how much does it cost to buy the customer? And how much does it cost you to buy? And they told me. I said, if you're correct, I said, I believe I could sell 1,000 a week of those. And they said, oh, welcome aboard. And I left my creative director's job. And that was in October. And in May, we were selling 1,000 a week. And just a couple of months later, they discovered they'd got all their numbers wrong and they were losing money on every one. And that was the first time I failed to make a million. There have been many other.
Yeah.
I had to wait to sell my agency to David Ogilvy to make a million. And then I had to wait for my ex-wife to sue me to get rid of the million. But that's another subject. My life has not been without incident.
Yeah, easy go.
Product still sells, but it was an education. And the thing is that through this, I met all the American hotshot copywriters who were coming over to Europe to ply their evil trade. I learned a lot from them.
Mm.
There's one guy who came, he was with another guy. I said, who's the other guy? And my friend said, that's his lawyer. I So what's he doing? He says, keeping him out of jail. And this guy used to write the most amazing headlines, and one of which I still remember to this day. It was a small advertisement, and it was to sell a tree, a particular tree. And it's a tree that's like a bush, and it's called Leylandii.
Okay.
Its advantage is that it grows very fast and very... I can probably see from my... I'm not sure I can, not from here. But you do see a lot of them, anyhow. And this guy's headline... for this product, I thought it was one. First, the illustration was very simple. Exaggeration never fails. So the illustration was a small man standing in front of a very tall tree, and the headline said, "Just plant and stand back."
Love that.
What interests me? Oh, I don't know. It interests me vaguely as I creep towards my ultimate destination. Is that there's nothing that's happened in this business that has changed, except the one thing I mentioned, which is that in those days, if you told too many lies, they put you in jail.
Yeah.
Nowadays, if you tell too many lies, you end up one of the two or three richest people in America running the...
We could get into, I don't know if we want to get into the state of the world affairs. I like to hope that things aren't getting worse, they're just becoming more transparent, and that the growing pains we're going through now are us recognizing how much people have been or are being manipulated and lied to, and that's coming to light, and sunlight is the best disinfectant. And that's what I hope my hopes are. We'll see how things go. The best experts I've talked to have estimates that it's going to take us to about 2035 for this to really fully shake out, just the way due course takes. But predictions are, everyone's got a prediction. But this guy wrote a book, and he's been pretty accurate with his past ones. And it's essentially, we're going through it. We're going through these growing phases. A lot of things in society are cyclical. And we've improved so much from even just 100 years ago, but we've got so much more to learn. And it doesn't mean everything has improved. Not everything has improved.
And that's what I'm going to say. We've improved in some respects, and in other respects, we have not improved.
Yes.
I was saying before, there is no law in the jungle.
Right.
To my mind, today is like the Wild West, where every now and then a gentleman comes into town and sells a fake nostrum for all your ills.
Yeah.
And this is what happens online every day.
Yeah.
And why are they succeeding? Because people are ignorant.
Right.
Why they're succeeding is because nobody is stopping them from doing it. Because the people who effectively run things, run the internet, they have no interest in making things legal.
Right.
Their only interest is, how can I make more money? I'm already the second richest man in the world. How can I make more money?
Yep. The founder of CrossFit said something once I thought was really smart. He said that ultimately markets are unknown and unknowable, because if I asked you how many people are in market to buy a car today, you could tell me indicators and keyword searches and stuff, but ultimately we don't know that number, and it's constantly fluctuating. So it's an unknown and unknowable variable, but everybody can recognize excellence. So if you really focus at being the most excellent at what you do, being the most excellent in your product category, that can help see you through thick and thin, so to speak. It doesn't guarantee 100% success, but it's way better than trying to get ahead just by manipulating people. That as things go up and down, as other people come in and out of the market, as you're, well, now I'm expanding on what he said, but he said, just focus on excellence. And I think I agree with that. I think we're seeing a lot of that in the world. And the things that are, like, people have complaints and new products, new devices, new industries are popping up to try to solve those. And I've flipped so much in the last 3-4 years. I am so not an ally of government institutions of any sort at this point. At this point, I feel like if it's important, people would pay for it. And if they wouldn't pay for it, then it's not important and the government doesn't need to be spending money on it. That's my pure... And the more research I talk about doing research, I did, I realized that a lot of the monopolies people want to complain about, they're all there because of legislation. If there was no legislation, those monopolies may not even exist. And I told you about that research that we did. We found 8 critical success factors for small and medium-sized businesses. They were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, business money management, business operations, and business intelligence. This is very like academic, the label of them. But there was a ninth factor, and that was government and economy. But what we learned was that there's nothing an individual can do collectively as an association, and that you can do things, but as an individual business owner, you're not going to change the government overnight. So the best thing you can do is focus on those other eight categories and do as best as you can to be as excellent as you can in them. And maybe move if you need to. You're not a tree.
My favorite is called Candide.
Say that again.
Candide. It's French, and it's candid with an E on the end.
Ah, Candide. Okay. Je parle français. Okay.
And it's obviously written by a great French writer whose name has immediately escaped me, even though it's my favorite novel, Voltaire.
Voltaire, yes. He's got great stuff.
Candide is the story of a young couple who suffer through a series of appalling catastrophes. Terrible things happen to them, all of which are not in the least bit imaginary. And at the end of the novel, which is relatively short, which I recommend, the Candide turns to his partner, his love, whose name escapes me for the moment. At my age, I'm amazed to be able to remember who I'm in the morning. And he said, "Il faut cultiver notre jardin." Means it was cultivate our garden. So the best you can do most of the time is just to get on with what you're doing and do it as well as you can. I don't think many people do what they do as well as they can.
No. I agree.
The fact is, otherwise, life would be very simple, but most people aren't very good. And this is our great weapon, the fact that other people are not very good. Occasionally, people have been very complimentary to me. And I said, you're wrong. I said, it's not that I'm all that good. It's just that everyone else is so bloody awful.
I think there's an element there's a very strong element to that. I say that not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things attach to you and feed on you for as long as they can. And it can be as simple as a drinking habit. That cigarettes. Like I talk to my daughter. I tell her that I smoked for 5 years when I was a kid. And I tell her like cigarettes, like they trick people. And then you're addicted. And the only benefit you get out of it is the good feeling of giving somebody else your money. That's the only benefit you get. And there's no, and it's a parasitic thing. As a society, if we were doing the best for our species, we wouldn't. So some of it is that other people aren't very good. And people, I don't think, realize how many, like my phone, people are always amazed with my phone that it doesn't vibrate. My phone, I got a smartphone. It doesn't vibrate. It doesn't ring. If you call me, it can be in my pocket. It can be in my hand and I won't even know you're calling me because it's my tool. It's my tool to use when I want to use it. It's not a tool for the external world to reach into my life and interrupt whatever I'm doing. So anyways, I think what you're saying, Martin.
You deplore reciprocation.
No, I like reciprocation, but now with all the Autobots that are calling people to message them and the text messages, and if you're not on a short list of and certain apps that I use just to communicate, it can wait till I'm ready and type thing. But I think that's a really important thing. Personally, I think the average person watches something like 6 hours of TV a day. We used to have Michelangelo that was an astrologer. He was into astronomy and he was a sculptor and he was a mathematician. And I think he played some musical instruments. People, and we all still have the same 24 hours in a day. So I really...
This is an interesting household in which I live. I live with a couple and their daughter who is 7. Who persecutes me mercilessly. I've known her since the hour she was born. And you know what? We are not connected to television. We want to watch something. I don't know. If they want to watch something, they get it online and don't have television because it's, as you said, you can waste a great many hours a day watching television mindlessly.
Yep. Oh, 100%. 100%. So for people that are listening, I feel like some of the fundamentals you've talked about is to focus on, if you want to persuade people to do what you want, you need to focus on why you, why now, why are they so reluctant? You really need to take the time and go through the hassle to visually and dramatically demonstrate, justify the claims that you're making. But at the same time, keep it as simple as you can. And sometimes, and you gave the example of end blinding, highlight, glare, And then when that stopped working, end blinding headlight glare instantly. When that stopped working, end blinding headlight glare instantly for good. And that a little exaggeration is okay. Showmanship is okay, as long as you understand that you're in it for the long term, that you're planting a garden. You're not, this isn't a drive-by robbery, that you can exaggerate a little bit and have fun. Just plant and stand back was a great example where it's said in jest, but at the same point, it's very compelling. And so I don't think people would be asking for refunds because the tree didn't magically grow overnight, but it'll get their attention. And so I think that, and then being good at what you do and comparing yourself with other people, because those are the people, like, who are the other options that people have to turn to? And if you don't know who the other options are, then you're walking without a map in the woods.
I think there's most of the things I believe are very simple. And I won't watch this again because I can't stand the sight of my face, but let alone my voice. But if I were anybody watching this who found it interesting, then I would suggest that they watch it one more time and make a note whenever something is said which seems important. And that's all you have to do. Things in a sufficiently efficient manner. Just write down all the things you do. And the great thing is that the wonderful thing about the world is that most people are not very good. Most people don't do what they ought to do. Most people don't think. Most people don't study. I remember before I even got a job, somebody's a very wealthy friend involved with the royal family, actually. He said to me one day, he said, I think you'd make a good copywriter. I said, what's a copywriter? That was the beginning of my career. But then I went out, before I got a job as a copywriter, I went to the library and I read every book I could find about copywriting. Knowledge itself is power, was said by a great philosopher in the 17th century. Knowledge itself is power. If you know what the other person doesn't know, you have the whip hand. So that helped me. When I got my job, I was surprised to find that I knew more than just about anybody else in this successful agency. If you can do more and you can do better. And that's why I think this, that's why I, if somebody like you gets in touch with me and says, oh, let's have a chat, I always say yes. Because I think that I might say something that somebody who is listening pays attention to and acts upon and benefits. And that's all it's about. All these things are about pay attention, which reminds me of one last little joke with nothing to do with it, but pay attention. The first time I went to Australia, I was married to a Maori who's from New Zealand, but first time I went to Australia, that I saw a commercial that I've never forgotten. And it was laughably simple, and I think incredibly effective. And it was because it had an element that is terribly important that I'll touch upon. It showed a beautiful blonde, very glamorous. I think she was wearing a bikini, I can't remember. She had a very strong accent. This is Australian, a real straight Aussie accent. And she had this very, very loud voice. Lacking in finesse, I think would be the way I put it. And what all she did was she said, are you paying attention? And it went on to introduce a new automobile dealer. I think if I'm exactly right. But this is it. Are you paying attention? People are not paying attention. You've got, all you've got to do is pay attention. People don't do it. And do something startling, like showing a beautiful blonde saying, are you paying attention?
Yeah, get attention.
No. That's why all these people that amuse me, they're like, just plant and stand back.
Yeah.
And very simple things. You could, very hard to be simple.
Yep.
Because you're confronted by the challenge, you tend to contemplate to complicate the possible solution.
Yeah.
Is there a simple way of doing this? Is there a simpler way of doing this? Almost everybody who does things extremely well is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quote I gave from about written in 1600 in an essay, knowledge itself is power. And this is what we've been taught. Mm. All we offer in these conversations is here's some knowledge for you. Yeah. Whether you choose to empower yourself by using it.
Right. I actually pulled up, because this brings up one of my favorite poems, because I think knowledge is power and time is power too, and how you use it. Our lives are a gift. Tomorrow isn't promised. And this is my favorite poem on time. It's about maybe 30 seconds or 45 seconds to read. Do you mind if I read it? Is it okay?
No, I can't stop you.
So it says, time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing. The supply of time is truly a daily miracle, an affair genuinely astonishing when one examines it. You wake up in the morning and lo, your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possessions. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable. And no one receives either more or less than you receive. In the realm of time, there is no aristocracy of wealth and no aristocracy of intellect. Genius is never rewarded by even an extra hour a day. And there is no punishment. You waste your infinitely precious commodity as much as you will, and the supply will never be withheld from you. Moreover, you cannot draw on the future. It's impossible to get into debt. You can only waste the passing moment. You cannot waste tomorrow. It is kept for you. You cannot waste the next hour. It is kept for you. I have said the affair was a miracle, is it not? You have to live on this 24 hours of daily time. Out of it, you have to spend health, pleasure, money, content, respect, and the evolution of your immortal soul. Its right use and its most effective use is a matter of the highest urgency and of the most thrilling actuality. All depends on that. Your happiness, the elusive prize you are all clutching for, my friends, depends on that. If one cannot arrange that an income of 24 hours a day shall exactly cover all proper items of expenditure, one does muddle one's whole life indefinitely. We shall never have any more time. We have, and we have always had, all the time there is. By Arnold Bennett, How to Live on 24 Hours a Day. And I think knowledge and time combined, using those with respect, is probably the most powerful weapon, the most powerful gift that we could have.
Did you say Arnold Bennett?
Arnold Bennett, yeah. How to Live on 24 Hours a Day.
Interesting, because the Arnold Bennett I'm familiar with is a great Victorian novelist. Yeah.
Be him. I'm not sure who this guy is. I just really like his poem. This has been such a wonderful conversation. If people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, if they want to follow up, you still have running your agency. If people, where are the best places for them to get in touch? You're sending emails too, I think, as well. Where do people?
Very simple. You write to Drayton@DraytonBird.com.
Drayton@DraytonBird.com. So that is DRAYTON. Drayton@DraytonBird, BIRDRAYTON, Drayton@DraytonBird.com, and he'll reply to you personally. Drayton, this has been so fantastic. Like I said, I think people probably want to listen to this more than once. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, no, but I can promise you that the minute we stop, it will occur to you. No, we can always talk again, but maybe at the risk of boring the shit out of people, we should make it shorter.
No worries, my team will handle that. This has been great. This is our second follow-up interview. For those that like this, you can also go check out our site for the first, but definitely let Drayton know how much you loved it. Send him an email at Drayton@DraytonBird.com. Send your thanks and appreciation. And Drayton, just thank you so much for sharing your time with us, my audience and I, knowing that you've got your own family, your own clients, your staff, your businesses, your things to do. Thank you for sharing with us so much.
My pleasure, and thank you, dear boy.